Welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, here come the D's. You can put a black line through GWS and all the latest on West Coast and Fremantle.
Sure, no.
You're quite brilliant.
Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is... Oh, that's what it is.
The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello, everybody. It's Tuesday morning. It's time for the Duff and Quarters podcast, post-round 10 of the AFL. I have with me in the studio Glenn Quatermain, the sports editor of the Sunday Times. I'm Mark Duffield, the senior football writer at the West Australian. We are brought to you this morning by Tab Touch and Quarters. The Eagles march on. Frio stumble at home. North Melbourne emerge as a finals contender. Collingwood emerges as a genuine finals contender. What were your thoughts of the round?
My thoughts of the round, well, I'll ask a question. Have you got a big black texter, a permanent marker? And some spare cash.
I hope you're not going to do the Pulp Fiction
stab
with your adrenaline.
Bit cryptic. You can get your permanent marker and you can just put it through GWS because they're getting, yes, they will get players back. Yes, they will be better. But back end of the eight, at best for them, can't win the flag just for what they're doing on the footy field at the moment, for the effort they're putting in. So there's the black texter, spare cash. Time to buy some timeshare up the Snowfields because I reckon there's going to be a few vacant over the next 3 or 4 years.
Yeah,
because the D's are coming.
They are, aren't they? So I reckon we put a bit of an asterisk next to the flogging of Adelaide because Adelaide are severely weakened at the moment.
I will put an asterisk, but it's great teams demolish teams.
Yeah.
And that's what they did. Melbourne would not have done this in the past.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Adelaide will come good.
Oh, no, I certainly don't. I agree with you on GWS. I don't do the same for Adelaide based on that effort. And your condemnation of GWS, I think, is the culmination of 4 weeks of non-performance rather than one bad day.
I picked them, and I've lost complete faith. It's not so much. I agree there are some really good players out, and Toby Green's at the top of it. He's arguably their most important player. I think we both agree on that. But it's just the effort the other way with GWS at the moment. They're just not fair dinkum. And as we've, it's just that concern about really talented kids going out there and having a kick without any real system, without any real second effort. And, you know, look, they're more talented on paper. Well, they're more talented than the last two premiers, but they're nowhere near as good.
And what's happened here is that when you look at their effort after half time, so I think it's 201.79.
It is.
After half time in the last 4 weeks. Now, at some point, in that 4 week period, the club leaders had to get together and say, we are not going away after half time. But every game, at some point, either in the third quarter or at some point in the last quarter, they have cracked and wilted over the last 4 weeks. It reeks of a lack of leadership, and I think it reeks of a lack of method. And I think there's a lot of people in that club have got to be under scrutiny. Leon Cameron has to be under scrutiny because even with all the players they've got out, there is still, you can list 6, 7 or 8 A-grade players who played on the weekend, even with all that they've got out.
Yes.
So Leon Cameron has to be under scrutiny because, you know, you should either be winning or you should be right up Essendon's clacker at home on the weekend. The strength and conditioning people have to be under scrutiny. One, because their injury track record over the past 18 months is horrendous. And two, because they can't run out games, which tells you that they've gotten stuff wrong here. And three, the club culture has to be under scrutiny because at some point in that month, they should have just screwed their guts up and said, we're either winning this or we're going to almost die losing, and we just haven't seen any of that.
Make it really hard for the other mob to win. That's all I want to see from them. And if they do that, they'll win more than they lose.
Yeah.
You know, two of their, look, Heath Shaw, should be one of their on-field leaders, did not lay a tackle last week. Mm. Jeremy Cameron, I love Jeremy Cameron, and he's going to have a second coming and he's going to be an elite right up there as good as anyone in the comp, but did not lay a tackle. So these are the stats I'm talking about that I think count with them at the moment.
I agree. Now, getting back to Melbourne.
Yep.
We did the numbers on West Coast a few weeks ago just to see, okay, what's been the turning point here? What's turned West Coast from a bottom end of the eight team to a top of the ladder team? And one of the stats, or a few of the stats that came out when we did those numbers, were that Melbourne figures very highly in the numbers that most coaches argue would matter. So that's things like contested possession, time in forward half.
Number one, number two, I think, yes, along those lines now.
So, yeah. And those things, you know, when you look at teams scoring goals mainly off turnover and hoping to get goals off turnover from inside their forward half, or the opposition kicking it outside their forward half and them just grabbing it and driving it back in and finding loose men, Melbourne figures very prominently in those numbers. So you want to see them beat someone better than a beleaguered and decimated Adelaide by injury, but as you said, the way they destroyed them was powerful, wasn't it?
And I'm going to mention, look, I love Jack Viney back in that side. There's just so many players to talk about at Melbourne, but the one I'm going to single out at the moment is Jack Melksham.
Yeah.
His forward half pressure is unbelievable at the moment. He'd be number one in the comp at the moment at that, I reckon, and there's a few good ones in there. So there's just so much to like about them, and their use of the footy, and just they're just a relentless footy team.
And Jack Viney adds that.
Oh, he just jacks the grind and the grunt and the leadership in the middle, and a bloke. They're all going along okay without him, but he's just one of those blokes, and there's not that many of them in the comp that you just want to play with and for.
Yeah, you'd walk a bit taller playing alongside Jack Viney. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah. You know, interestingly, you mentioned the inside 50s, and the one of the teams that's right up there is the Western Bulldogs.
Yeah.
He's trying to get them to play that 2016 footy again. And they're going okay. So if I was a Western Bulldogs fan, I know it looks a bit bleak at the moment, but at least they're up there around the mark. Obviously, there's a bit further back that's a problem with the Dogs at the moment, you know, getting ball from their back half. But, you know, there are some signs that are okay for them.
Yeah, and he's playing. The only question mark with the Bulldogs is, so they are very young. When you look at the team that's going out on the park every week for the Bulldogs, it's a young team.
Just about the youngest in it, I'd say.
But why is it that there are older players that we would think are in their best 22 who are running around in the VFL? That would be my query on the Bulldogs at the moment.
Yeah, you'd have to ask Luke Beveridge that. He's a different cat. And speaking of different cats, what'd you take of Dom Pike's three-quarter time address or non-address? I loved it. I sometimes work. Sometimes
I don't know.
I don't know. Sometimes looks are better than words, I reckon.
I think you've got to be careful as a coach that the message you're trying to send is the message the players get. And, you know, sometimes we as writers sit down and we think we're being real clever, and then you'll get a phone call 3 days later from a reader who's completely misunderstood what you've said. So, in other words, you've failed, because you failed as a writer to communicate what you really meant. As a coach, be clear, be simple. Yeah, okay. You're disappointed with the effort. You're about 80 points down at the final change, and you're not happy. We get that. The players are disappointed too. They didn't mean to be 80 points down at the final change. Talk about your method. Talk about where you've gone wrong. Was the effort there? Was the intensity there? Did you fail tactically in some way? Did the players fail in some way to carry out your instructions? What can we get out of the final quarter? That works a lot better than just trying to stare them down.
You know, one of my favourite stories, and I do go back to Hawthorn a bit, but 91 second semi-final, Hawthorn playing Geelong, three-quarter time, Geelong coming really hard at Hawthorn, Geelong with the wind in the last quarter. And Alan Joyce walks out of the huddle, and the boys are a bit, you know, sphincters are getting a bit tight, the game's getting a bit tight, and he just walks out, looks at him and says, you know what to do, turn around and walked off. And they're all like, oh, all right then. And they did win the game and go on to win the flag. But I'd love that story. That's amazing.
That's it's up to you guys. That's a very important method to message to send to players, isn't it? Because players are human beings, and they will hide behind other people's responsibility if they can, so.
You know what I loved about the Eagles' win against Hawthorn? And I thought my boys, the Hawks, I thought they were really good. A lot better than they were the week before, which gave me some hope. I thought Hawthorn was really good and clogged up the middle, tried different tactics against the Eagles, and the Eagles found a way. Our beautifully organised defence at the weekend, as it has been this year, I thought their defence just really stood up again, and I love the way they kicked their way through problems and found a way to win, which I think's really important. They've had three wins on the road now, in Melbourne, I should say. Three in Melbourne, yeah, and I love the way they did it. It's just something different about the Eagles in terms of its, you know, there is a long way to go, but I like the way they're solving problems.
Yeah, I've got no doubt they're the team to beat now.
I think so.
I think that, yes, they'll have to go over there and win at some point in September. They'll be hoping that's later.
Home final. It looks like at this stage, unless they completely muck it up, and the way they're playing for their coach, the way they're playing for each other, I just can't see them mucking it up, and the draw is better. They're certainly getting a home final to start with.
I get the feeling that it's not just about the talent at West Coast, it's about the time in their lives. You know, a few of them are married, a few of them have had babies.
Yep.
They're knuckling down to what they're about, which is about playing football.
You know, and even at the weekend, Darling doesn't kick a goal but contributes meaningfully.
Mm.
That's the difference this year, I reckon, with that team and teams in the past. Has been a great contributor still against Hawthorn, but the stats don't necessarily show it.
So, okay, West Coast reinforces their top four credentials as a result of that.
Yep.
What did you make of your boys, the Hawks?
I've said all along 6th to 10th, and I don't disagree with that. I still think they can make finals, but it'll be at the bottom end. If they do, you're not winning any flags. I still like the way they're going about it. It was a better effort. Took it right up to the Eagles, could well have beaten the Eagles. So I thought, lot to like about them.
And what did you make of Willie and the knee drop first? I thought the knee drop was worse than the umpire.
Yeah, I did too. Look, it's probably okay. I don't think it was, 50-metre penalty, so that's okay. I'm happy with that. The umpire tap, don't like it, but I just think, I agree with Adam Simpson in that it was a friendly tap. You know, I think we do have to draw a distinction somewhere. Don't touch an umpire. That's sacrosanct. But we do have to bring the human element into it sometimes.
I think Willie needs to do the Bart Simpson thing. Do not touch the umpire 100 times on a blackboard or a whiteboard as they do it. Because,
that'll be his punishment,
I mean, you know, at the end of the day, do you want to see players suspended because they give the umpire a friendly tap? You don't. But at the end of the day, where's he been for the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, and you know what, Duff? Yesterday I was like, I have no idea where this is going to go.
Yeah.
I have no idea what the MRP is going to do with this whole thing, really, with the tribunal. He's very lucky. I'm happy with the result, but he's lucky.
Okay, let's move on to North Melbourne Fremantle. And while we're on MRP matters, we saw another completely accidental clash of heads, two concussions come out of it. So based on the precedent set here, I was thinking, well, Aaron Sandilands is going to be okay.
Yep.
But I wonder how many more concussions there'll be before they decide we can't have this anymore and someone's going to get weeks for an accidental clash of heads.
Yeah, look, it is a combat game, though. It is a physical game. Yeah,
you don't want to see.
No, you don't.
You don't want to see 211 centimetre players staggering off the ground like falling trees.
No.
Which is how Sandy looked.
It's a bit like Harry Madden all those years ago when he came off the ground. But look, you raise a good point. It'll probably get to that, Duff, I reckon.
I think that they've made a terrible error with the Ryan Burton one.
Yeah, they have.
On Sean Higgins.
Yeah, we knew that.
And I think they're saddled with it now. You wouldn't want to be a player early in 2019 going to bump a player, making accidental head contact and concussing the other player, even if you concuss yourself.
I can see down the track there will be you make head contact, you're automatically out for a week.
Well, that's how it was.
Yeah, but it will be, there will be no grey area. I think it'll just be bang, gone. And you know it as soon as you've done it. Oh, well, I'm out for a week. That's just the way it's going to go.
Yeah,
it has to, really. I think that there's too much grey area now. Has to go that way. One, you know, and I don't think we want the other. I think we want it to go in that direction.
Yeah. Now, Fremantle, I think, starting to find their level in this competition quarters, and that level is still inside the bottom six or seven, I think.
Yeah. I think they could. Home games may enable them to push up to about 10th, 9th, I reckon. That'd be the best result for them this year. It was a really interesting game at the weekend. It felt more like a 7-goal loss. But having said that, North's inaccuracy early, and Freo, if it wasn't for a few silly free kicks, could have won the game. So it was a really strange game, really bizarre game. I love the way, I like North's faith in each other. And have a look at their structure too, North. And I'll put my hand up straight away. I had them right on the bottom, if not near it. But, you know, couple of strong forwards, couple of strong defenders, and a pretty honest and hard-working midfield. So the structure there is sort of not dissimilar to the Eagles, really.
They've got good bones as a team, haven't they? You're right. Robbie Tarrant, elite defender. Scotty Thompson, serial pest, very good defender. Down the other end, White and Brown, elite AFL forwards. I guess what you forget and what you don't bank on is that when teams don't play that well, you forget how good their good players are. So Waite is so injury prone. You know, you think, well, will they get a full season out of him? Well, so far they've got a full half season out of him, and he's been outstanding. And down the other end, Robbie Tarrant is probably a great AFL defender who's flown a little bit under the radar, I think, for a fair while. He is genuinely good.
Yeah, he has flown, I guess, from a general perception, he has. I've always loved him. I've always thought he's been a really sound player. North, I think, are now at the stage where we can say you're playing finals, but it's going to be, I'd still have him in that bottom four, that bottom end of the final system. I don't have him any higher than that. I think the four's almost found itself out, apart from Adelaide, who may come in.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think I expect Adelaide to push into the eight at some stage. I would expect North Melbourne is more likely to be in than out, but I think there's a good few teams in that. I mean, you mentioned Port. Hawthorn.
Hawthorn and Port have to come in, Port, but possibly come in, I should say.
You know, where's Collingwood are six at the moment.
Are they?
So I can see them hanging in there. I think they are starting to improve rapidly, and I think manpower
Collingwood are eighth.
So
you've got Collingwood, I think Geelong's susceptible, in my opinion. A lot of people expect them to come good and challenge. I can't see that happening at the moment. Gee, they were lucky against Carlton.
Yeah.
Really lucky. And who have they got this week? They've got Gold Coast at Metricon. I'll tell you, it's one of those games. They could lose that.
Well, it's a big day for Gold Coast, isn't it? They've been...
Gaz?
They've been on the Contiki tour for 3 months.
Nice game too, with little Gaz coming back.
Yeah, well, little Gaz just ain't little Gaz anymore.
No, he's not. Almost saw some... not spite, but resentment in his voice post-game at the weekend, saying, hey, you guys, don't expect me to get 35-40 a week anymore. That's not who I am anymore. Well, that attitude's changed pretty quickly, Duff.
Yeah.
That's not what he was at the end of last year.
Well, to me, little Gaz should be playing forward and trying to kick three.
Yeah.
That's where his role is at the moment, and I think that provided he can do that, I think he can be of... significant value to Geelong, but if they're expecting him to be the 30 plus 10 clearances midfielder, then they're going to be bitterly disappointed.
A couple of questions, Duff. Damo asks, if Apness comes in for Sandilands, who can't play due to concussion, would it be better swinging Cox into defence and having Johnson as the main ruckman and Apness as the big tall up forward? Well, they're coming up against Collingwood, and the bloke, I reckon,
Brody Grundy,
is going to win the Brownlow. Well, he's going to be right up there in the mix. I know we got Fife very high at the moment.
Brody Grundy.
I'm saying that this could be the year that it bucks the trend of the midfielder's medal, even though he is a midfielder. We haven't seen too many ruckmen in recent times. He's playing Jim Stein's type footy.
Yeah, he's a very good player. He's tough. He's learned. He wasn't a great jumper, but he's learned to compete far better at the bounce downs and stoppages.
Here's a question. Who's your All-Australian ruckman? Gawn? Grundy? Where is Nick Nat in the conversation?
I reckon there's about five in the conversation.
Yeah.
I think Nick Natanui has to be in the conversation. Max Gawn has to be in the conversation. I think Brody Grundy is probably the one of all of them right now who leads the pack. Even someone like Todd Goldstein has had a very good season. Even someone like Aaron Sandland has had a very good season. There's some very good ruckman.
McAvoy early too, but I'd still have those three at the top end of it. And I'd at the moment have Grundy rucking all Australian ruck slot. I'd have Gawn possibly on the bench. And Nick Nat, you may even have three ruckmen in the side at the moment.
That won't happen.
But so there's two ahead of Nick Nat is what I'm saying right now.
I think right now.
We haven't answered the question. Sorry, mate. Yeah.
So what do they do? Look, if Aaron can't play because of concussion, then I'd be tempted to I think Michael Apner should play because he was the best of their big men last week. I'm not sure that Luke Stranatica is ready. And Scott Jones, I think you have to get to a point where you're down to Scott Jones before you play Scott Jones.
So Apness has done, he's put the hand up. Ross Lyons said, we'll play kids. Apness is not such a kid really anymore, is he? But he needs to play.
He's physically mature. He'll give them something forward of centre. I would go with Apness and Brennan Cox as your ruck duo.
Yep.
I'll tell you what I would be tempted to do. I would be tempted to give Michael Johnson another rest, and I'd be tempted to explore Shane Kirsten at AFL level as that third defender. Just because if Ross is looking beyond the older players, I think it's a good time to see whether Shane Kirsten is up to playing that role at AFL level.
Well, now, why not now? Because that's what the role he's been playing in the Waffle. So let's see. Let's show your cards.
Yeah, I think. And I think the other thing that question that you've asked leads into a good question, follow-up question, and this one comes from Paul. He says, I think there is general consensus that the Dockers forward line is a work in progress, notwithstanding the poor delivery the forwards often get. But much of the conversation usually centres around the big men. If part of the role of the big men is at least to bring the ball to ground, then I thought Cox and McCarthy did an okay job on the weekend. They hit packs and weren't outmarked much. But the Freo small forwards aren't providing much at the moment. Ballantyne had 10 and Matera had 13, and many of those for both players were up the ground. My question, what are the small forward options, and will this mean the end of the road for Ballantyne? So when you look at Ross's comments post-match, and he talks about doubling down and playing more kids, I think that has, A, it has grave implications for someone like Daniel Pearce, who's been in and out of the team anyway. I think it has implications for Michael Johnson, who is starting to really creak a little bit and starting to look like an old player, like a 33-year-old player. And I'm not sure it doesn't have implications for Hayden Ballantyne as well. Mm. Hayden Ballantyne, never question his effort, never question his endeavour. He goes to ground too much now, and every time you're on the ground, if you don't have the ball with you, you are out of the contest. And they just don't get enough bang for Bellas's buck. You know, he gets possessions that don't amount to scores on the board. At the moment...
How many tackles did he lay last week?
Well, he tries to lay a lot of tackles, but he doesn't actually impede the opposite. I mean, the whole idea of tackle, whether you're tackle pressure or corral pressure or, you know, bump pressure or whatever it is, the whole idea is to impede their ball movement from their defensive 50. That's the aim. I don't think that Ballas is overly effective in doing that anymore. They have Switkowski, Fremantle, but Switkowski, last time I checked their injury list, he was on that list with a hamstring, and I haven't seen him out training much recently, so I would think that's a significant hamstring. The other one is Giro.
Mm.
Now, if Giro comes in, what role does he play? If Daniel Pearce were to go out, does someone like Taylan Duman come in to play Daniel Pearce's role? Or would Ross see Stefan Giro as a replacement for Daniel Pearce?
I would think that would be the more likely scenario, given his and the hype. That there's a little bit of hype around Giro, and he's been performing well. So you'd like to see him come in, and it's a good role to come in and ask someone to apply that forward 50 pressure.
Yeah,
a rookie. It's a good role for a young bloke to play, I reckon. So I'd like to see him come in. I agree with Pearce and Johnson. Not sure if I'm ready to fly the flag on Ballantyne just yet. I would like to see him lay a few more tackles that stick, though.
Yeah, I just think that I know that Fremantle have always been big on the process. You know, Ross often says forwards kick goals and they see goals kicked. But I need to see forwards kicking more goals. Mm. I mean, Hayden Ballantyne has to be a 1-2 goal a game forward. And he can't afford too many games where he doesn't kick his one goal.
Mm.
And I think... Fremantle has too many forwards who have too many games where they're not getting that one goal and contributing on the scoreboard. And if that, what that means is that they're not only not kicking goals, they're not seeing them kicked either, because this is going right across the board. And they need to find a better system, and that may mean they need to find better components for the system. Question from Perry. How will Fremantle cover the likely requirements? Retirements of Sandilands, Ballantyne, Johnson, Pearce and co. given they have one pick in the first round of this year's draft, should Chris Bond go when Lyon walks?
I don't think Lyon's walking.
Well, he's there till 2020.
Yeah.
And unless there is some sort of offer from another club which would shift Ross, and even then Fremantle would have to be happy to let him go, and so they're big ifs. So of those outs, I think they have players to replace Johnson. Daniel Pearce, I think, is barely in their best 22 anyway, if he is at all.
Yeah.
So I don't view that. I mean, Sandilands and Ballantyne, Sandilands is significant. I expect Sandilands to go on next year, but yeah. I think next year Sandilands.
It's his last year next year, surely.
Yeah, and next year's probably if you get 12 games out of Aaron Sandilands next year, you would hope that four of them are played with Sean Darcy in the team, and Sean Darcy's playing 16 games next year. Maybe 4 or 5 weeks you sit Sean Darcy down and have him around.
His injury is really, it's affected their structure this year. It's a real shame Sean Darcy's been injured. He would have given Sandilands more of a rest, which is why Apness has to play this week.
Yeah, so I think Apness plays, and I think as we've discussed, I think Shane Kirsten comes in and they find out a bit about him. They find out whether he can be that Liam Jones player who doesn't quite crack it as a forward but maybe able to crack it as a defender. One more question.
Yep.
From Street. If the AFL is fair dinkum about not becoming a mirror image to rugby, then there is an easy answer to the continual ball-ups and rolling mauls that we are currently seeing. If a player handballs to a teammate who is in very close proximity, then the no prior opportunity should be discarded. I have been going on for years that when the player with the ball and under pressure handballs to his teammate, he is doing so with the unsaid add-on, it's now your problem and I get a stat. The tight handball is ugly and is so rugby it is embarrassing. Also, Trevor Street, the recent game played in China is a joke and a junket for various hangers-on.
Well, I'm not sure it's not a junket. I'll agree with that. It's definitely a junket. You look up the definition of junket, and that's that game. But I like the game still. I'd go with it still. Junkets happen everywhere, so, you know, it's just life. I don't necessarily agree with the first handball. I like the idea of your team prior. So the first...
Well, I think that's what he's saying.
Yeah.
I think he's saying that... But if there's a dodgy handball that puts a teammate under pressure, that's your prior opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's if it's your first possession, if you've gained possession off turnover or whatever, and then you're running with a footy and you handball, and then it's a prior, then I think that's play on or a ball up. I think they're on. I'm not sure. If it's a second possession, possibly. If it's a second possession from the first, and then I think prior goes. That's what I'm saying. It's a team prior.
I reckon one the AFL umpires aren't getting right consistently this year is the one where they either call play on because they think the ball is spilled, or they ping a guy who hasn't had much prior opportunity for incorrect disposal when the ball spills out. And I think that is one they need to be more consistent on. It either needs to be no prior opportunity and it's either a ball up or play on, or it's prior opportunity and even if the ball spills, the tackler gets rewarded and gets the free. I think the prior opportunity, the amount of prior opportunity should be the key and not whether the ball spills or is illegally disposed.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, that's fair comp. Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that.
I think too often a player has had prior and they call play on because the ball spills, and also other times a player has had no prior and the ball spills and they ping him because they argue it's illegal disposal.
Yeah, there's a lot of good tackles that aren't rewarded too.
There are.
Yeah, yep. And you'd like to see them rewarded. Just a couple of – we may just run through a few games. Essendon, GWS. Essendon, the last 2 weeks, they've commitment to the cause, and that forward 50 pressure that we've been asking for all year was there.
Isn't it amazing how you can just with one small positional shift – you can change the nature of their team. So Mark Bagley goes forward. And Mark Bagley's just a blue-collar, hard, honest, give-you-everything-he's-got player. And he goes down there and he sets a standard and the other forwards follow. And Devon Smith was already at that standard anyway. He was, like, leading their tackle count, applying fierce pressure. And it's changed the entire nature of their team.
Yeah, and what were they calling him? One-touch Woody. He's now one-effort Woody. He's now 4 or 5 efforts, so if you know what I mean. There's an unintended Nice little segue, that one.
Yeah, we'll move on very quickly.
Sydney v Brisbane, a good solid win to Sydney. Another great effort from Brisbane. We'll recover in a moment, don't worry. And the one thing I'll say, look, it was just a good grinding win from Sydney. Well done. Great effort from Brisbane again. But what's going on at Sydney with all these injuries? Mills now with playing with a gridiron ball. And
jeez, they lead the league in bizarre injuries, don't they?
Rampy last year, falling over a chain and missing half the year. So, Sydney boys, when you have a coffee at a cafe, just walk home. Just don't be mucking around.
Or just wear helmets everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
And probably ankle strapping. Yep. Before you get out of bed in the morning, strap your ankles.
Good call. Richmond v St Kilda, 28-point win. St Kilda, obviously, a lot better effort. 6 goals from Gresham. Josh Caddy. 6 goals.
I'm glad you brought him up. You beat me to it by about 5 seconds.
Yeah.
He was basically a second string midfielder. And now he's become one of the very best players of his type in the AFL. But it's not a midfielder. It's an undersized forward, yep, like a Russell Robertson type, who can, yep, give a great contest in the air, fierce on the ground. His ability to play the Jack Revolt role on the weekend, when Revolt was concussed early by Jake Carlisle, went down. That was the difference between defeat and victory in that game for the Tigers, I reckon.
It was, and Caddy doing it every week now as opposed to one from two or three, which is was him in the past.
Mm.
For me, the most improved player in the comp, Josh Caddy. There's a few out there, but he'd be at the top of my list.
That's a pretty good call.
Collingwood, just doing nothing wrong at the moment. A 35-point win over the Western Bulldogs. Not a lot to, you know, like from a spectacle point of view. Tom Phillips.
Yeah.
He's one who does go under the radar, yeah, and just does it every week.
Well, he's one of those big runners, isn't he? Which means he's around the ball a lot, which means he gets big numbers.
Hard at it too, and doesn't shirk. I like him. He's a good footballer.
Yeah, no, there's a lot to like about him. They're going all right, the Pies.
Yeah, they're going okay. Yeah, I'm not doing backflips, but they're going okay.
Yeah, but you're a Hawthorn man. You hate them.
I don't hate them as much as I hate others.
and before we leave, just another bouquet for Dane Beams.
Yes.
Stepped aside as the captain.
Yep.
And then, which we thought was incredibly mature and incredibly brave to talk about it, and then to step up and play the game he played,
yep,
against Sydney. Just, I think the respect grows enormously there. He was enormous for them.
And they
were in the game very late because Dane Beams played an enormous game.
And encourages an open conversation about mental health issues, which is great. Well done, Dane.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we're going to be back on Thursday. We'll be talking about the upcoming games in round 11, quarters. Thank you for joining us.
I'm off to book my timeshare, mate, up at the Snowfields. Very cheap going at Mount Higginbotham at the moment.
Who will you be renting off? Which venerable Melbourne member?
Will it be a hyphen. Hyphenated name.
Will there be slippers and a pipe?
Oh, there will be. And a roaring fire.
A roaring fire.
I'll be sitting on the Chesterfield, sat back on the hard backed Chesterfield with my pipe and my paper and my little.
Oh, I expect there'll be cognac involved.
Oh, there's cognac. Of course there's cognac. Might be even a nightcap, as in a nightcap.
Oh, very good. All right, we'll be back on Thursday. Thank you for joining us for Tab Touch this morning, and we'll talk to you in a couple of days.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.